May it please the court. Again, my name is Robert Hill, and I represent plaintiff appellant in this case. With me at council table is Tom McFarland. I'm going to try not to be repetitive, although the issues are somewhat similar. As I just shared with your honors, the plaintiff here alleged the two focused non-disclosures as to what the insured was getting when they purchased UMUIM, and what, if anything, in addition they were getting if they paid additional premiums. There are, as I noted earlier, multiple vices from not making accurate and full disclosures under these statutes, one of which is how would people know if they were entitled to file a claim, quite apart from anything issues in our case. But if we look here, and for example, on the second point, we had a question during the last discussion in terms of Allstate. According to the filings that we filed in the trial court record at 1-86-37883 Exhibit 2, Allstate charged, if you had a second vehicle for your UM-UIM, charged 185% of the single vehicle rate. So there is no factual question in the record here but what that occurred. It's equally undisputed that Allstate never disclosed what, if any, coverage, UM-UIM coverage, those insureds were getting for that. As all the prior court's decisions have held.
Well, let me stop you there, Mr. Hill, because I'm confused a little bit. If Allstate says we have a two-tiered premium structure and we're charging 185%, and they're covering people at this point, because they've never had an OBNI clause in their policy, as I understand it. Isn't the insured getting something more than simply a single vehicle that might get used more, but they're getting two vehicles that might get used a little less than one vehicle, so that justifies not doubling the premium, but there is additional risk. So the carrier is covering additional risk. The insured may be getting the same kind of coverage, but they are exposing themselves to more risk because there's two vehicles.
Your Honor, this is I should add that filing was a post-De Herrera filing. But the point of that, Your Honor, is under the file rate doctrine, we as the plaintiffs and the defendants as the defendants can't challenge the rates they filed. The rates are what the rates are. What we have alleged is that there is a failure here to disclose facts. Under no circumstances can I come in under the filed rate doctrine, and this trial court specifically entered a ruling in 2005 on that issue. And what the court found was that under the filed rate doctrine, our claims prior to De Herrera should be dismissed and after should stand, because as the court said, after De Herrera, the defendants all knew and the insurance commissioner knew exactly what the standard was in terms of the De Herrera rates. So there was an assumption after that date that they made those knowingly. We're a file and use state, so those were filed after De Herrera. Our point is not to challenge how they calculate with actuarial science their rates. Ours is to say, should they have given sufficient information for our insureds to make an informed decision?
Why wasn't it enough to say, you got to insure all your vehicles or none of your vehicles?
Well, you haven't told, in the first case, you haven't told anyone that if you buy your first policy, that policy coverage will cover you and all your resident relatives in whatever vehicle you're located. And you haven't, if you charge for that second vehicle, you haven't told them that what you're buying by paying 185% of the base rate is simply coverage for Class 2 insurance, which you may or may not wish to pay for. You're paying almost as much for the occasional guest in your car as you're paying for all of your insurance in the family.
Except in a multi-vehicle policy, it's a take-it-or-leave-it proposition, isn't it?
Well, it would be take-it-or-leave-it if you were informed. I don't disagree. I have no problem with them charging 185%. That's not my issue. And they can charge whatever the insurance commissioner lets them charge. What I say is, though, if they're going to, I mean, it's the same decision we saw just in the Hartford case. If you look in the Hartford case and they say, if they had been informed of that, then they could have made an informed decision about what they wish to purchase. I mean, one of the things they could have done, and there's a good hypothetical if I could give it to Your Honor. Mr. Consumer comes in and says, I'd like to buy a single vehicle. I only have one car. I'd like to buy it. 3 months later, Mr. Consumer's wife comes in and buys a car. She wants to get it insured. At that point, we say, Mr. Consumer should have been told that what he purchased when he purchased that first vehicle was UIM coverage for himself, his spouse, and all resident relatives. So at the time Mrs. Consumer purchases the vehicle 3 months later, she knows that she has UIM coverage. She then has a bunch of options, one of which would be to go to Allstate with Mr. Consumer and add a vehicle. They would tell her, it's going to cost you 185% of what you've been paying. And she would say, what am I getting for the 185%? If this were a candid discussion with open disclosure, and they'd say, you're getting coverage for class two insureds in that second vehicle. And she'd say, only in the second vehicle? Yes, only in the second vehicle. Only class two insureds? Yes, only class two insureds. Well, then I don't think I want to purchase that. That's very expensive. That's almost twice what we're paying. I'll go to another insurance company. I'll buy my insurance there for the same premium or whatever premium, better or worse, and I will forego UIM coverage. All my resident relatives and myself are still covered under the first policy. We have exactly the same coverage. The only difference is that we're paying 100% of that first rate premium rather than 185%. That's what Hartford said should happen, that kind of disclosure so people could make that informed decision.
Well, when the trial court said there's no obligation to essentially tell the consumer to go to our competitor, isn't that indeed what you're asking for?
No, absolutely not. What we're saying is you should give honest information about the product you're selling. They only have to tell what they're selling. If they had said UIM coverage on the first vehicle covers you and all your resident relatives, and if then they want to charge an additional premium consistent with the Jones decision, it's a 1997 decision, it's not novel law, it's 12 years old in this court. If they then said, you're going to buy a second, here's what you're getting for what you're paying. The consumer has not been told anything about anybody other than Allstate at that point. That's all we've asked. But the consumer then has an informed decision to make. And then they can go someplace and ask, what do you provide? And what are my options with you? So they can make informed decisions, which if you look back at the regulatory structure here, the legislature is very conscious about this. The legislature in 101, I should get into the specific statutes, but I mean the legislative purpose was to let the marketplace with informed decision makers rather than regulation control these matters. And the legislature in the expression of purpose specifically said it's critical that the products that are in the marketplace from insurance companies be sufficiently disclosed and accurately disclosed so that people can make informed decisions. And that's all we're talking about here. Them accurately disclosing what they're selling. One, what the UM coverage provides in the first instance. And two, if they're buying something extra, what, if anything, they're getting. It's not a novel legal theory. I mean, it's a very basic theory that's consistent with the statute in this court for decades. It's consistent with the 1997 decision in Jones.
Well, your hypothetical is interesting, but we don't have any facts like that pleaded in this. In
well,
these
yes.
Cases, do we?
Well, Your Honor, it's agreed in Allstate has conceded that there are other people out there providing single policy coverage, single vehicle policies. So Mrs. Customer had absolutely that opportunity. There is no dispute in this case. We have alleged, and they have not disputed, the fact that they do not require anyone to buy all of their coverage with them. You're not going to tell my wife, because I purchased with Allstate, that she has to purchase with Allstate.
Could
she
Allstate
has the right to go anywhere.
Could Allstate, under those circumstances, or any carrier, say, we decline to write you coverage anymore because you now have two cars, and well, you refuse to insure the second car?
No one ever has, Your Honor.
But could they do that? I mean, there's a quid pro quo here, isn't there? Couldn't Allstate say, it's all or nothing, you pay our price, or you go someplace else?
Well, they would have no, I mean, I don't know whether they could or couldn't, Your Honor, to be right honest. I mean, no insurance company to date has ever done that. I don't know whether the insurance commissioner would approve it or not, and I don't know how to answer the question. But clearly in the record, there is nothing that stops Mrs. Customer from going and buying insurance independent of her husband. I mean, she's not locked to her husband's leg.
Pardon me for interrupting.
No.
But, there wouldn't be anything to stop Allstate from saying, from the very first car you purchase, we're going to charge you an amount which is 185% of, we're raising our rates from here on out. And so for UIM, the rate is going to be whether you have one car or 50 cars. 185%. They could do that, right?
You know, again, Your Honor, that goes into the filed rate doctrine. If the insurance commissioner approved that, I think the test is fair and reasonable.
Right.
So, then if it's approved, it's approved.
Right. So, and so, but in that situation, if the, if with the very first car purchased, that's when the entire amount is paid. And on each subsequent car, no additional money is paid for UM/UIM without the disclosure that you seek for Class 2s, then I assume you'd have no problem with that disclosure.
I wouldn't have a disclosure problem, probably, because I wouldn't have any damages, to be candid. But I think the insurance commissioner would have a serious problem as to whether they could establish that that was a fair and reasonable rate. I'll reserve the remaining time.
May it please the court. My name is Peter Valletta. I represent the appellee Allstate Indemnity Company, appearing for Hawk Beach, and I thank the court for permitting my admission for purposes of this case. This appeal is unlike the other 10 cases that have been decided. Allstate's forms and Allstate's premium structure are unique. Unlike any of the other cases, Allstate always sold UM coverage that followed the person. Named insureds and resident relatives were covered in any vehicle or elsewhere, both before and after the De Herrera decision. Allstate's policies did not have the owned but not insured exclusion. They didn't have it before De Herrera, and they didn't have it after De Herrera. And Allstate's policies always charged UM premium based upon one rate for a single vehicle and a different rate if you had multiple vehicles. And that was true before De Herrera was decided and after De Herrera was decided. The decisions by—
Mr. Valletta, pardon me for interrupting you so early in your argument, but isn't that really the central issue here, the effect of those two different rates? Isn't that what we need to be focusing on is what does that mean?
I would agree with Your Honor that that is an important factor that you have before you, and you have a record regarding an insurer here who charged rates that were commensurate with the benefits provided and in conformity with the administrative regulations. Indeed, I actually believe that this case represents a true example of the Jones versus USAA position that Mr. Hill has argued in this and other cases, because Allstate told the insureds what coverages they got at all times, told it accurately, and they told them what premium they were paying when they purchased those coverages. They knew they were purchasing based upon the policy documents, which clearly stated that Class 1 insureds received coverage everywhere, and Class 2 insureds were covered in insured vehicles. So they knew the scope of the coverage, and they knew what premium they were paying.
Turning to Mr. Hill's hypothetical about Mr. and Mrs. Consumer, what would Mrs. Consumer have been told when she came in and said, I would like to insure my car with Allstate, what do I get for my extra money?
If Mr. and Mrs. Insured already had an Allstate policy, if Mrs. Insured came in and said, I want to insure my vehicle, she would have been able to add the vehicle to the existing policy. And her policy documents tell her that Class 1 insureds are insured from day one in every circumstance, but the Class 2 insureds, that the non-resident relatives, guest occupants, they are only covered when they are in insured vehicles. The policy language, it makes it clear that the addition of vehicles on the policy provides that benefit, the coverage for the Class 2 insureds. They receive UM coverage when they're in those insured vehicles.
So if she came in the door to Allstate, it would have been made clear to her. Let's assume for the purposes of argument that it was a $100 policy premium for the first car. She would have been told, we're going to charge you now $185, and this is what your extra money gets you.
That is correct, Your Honor. That is exactly what she is told in her policy documents. They tell her, all right, they tell her right up front that you already have Class 1 insurance and that when you add a vehicle, we are charging you the additional amount, and you are getting additional coverage for non-resident relatives and guest occupants in insured vehicles.
Can you point to exactly where in the policy that disclosure is made?
I can, Your Honor. We reproduced the language from the policies in our brief, and the citation appears there on pages 13 and 14 of our brief. Briefly, no pun intended, it says that uninsured motorist coverage will pay damages that an insured person is legally entitled because of bodily injury suffered by the insured person. And an insured person is defined as you and a resident relative. No restriction. There's no limitation by vehicle. That's what I was talking about, how the policy read before and after De Herrera. It also says that, insured persons are also defined as any other person while getting into, out of, or using your insured auto with your permission. So we know that insured persons are also permissive users, non-resident relatives who are occupying your vehicle. And they are then insured by virtue of that second clause.
But that second clause doesn't say when you add a second vehicle, you get this new coverage. It provides Class 2 insurance from Vehicle 1, does it not?
It provides Class 2 insurance with regard to Vehicle 1 only. If the policy only lists one vehicle, there's only one insured auto under the vehicle. One insured auto under the policy. And therefore, by that definition, the Class 2 insured, your non-resident relatives, et cetera, they are only insured persons when they are occupying an insured vehicle. So, yes, there is Class 2 insurance with regard to Vehicle 1. When you add Vehicle 2, you are now adding Class 2 insurance with regard to the use and occupancy of Vehicle 2.
Okay, is an individual policyholder told anything other than what you've just described when they would come in under Mr. Hill's hypothetical? They told that you already have this coverage and you'll have it, but you have to cover this car. I mean, isn't it Allstate's position that it's all or nothing? You've got to cover all the vehicles you own, or we will cover none of them.
No, that is not Allstate's position. Allstate's position is that if you insure a vehicle on the policy, it must have uninsured motorist coverage. You cannot select UM on Vehicle 1 and deselect or not select Vehicle 2.
My question was probably bad. It relates to the UIM coverage. You get UIM coverage on car one, you have to get UIM coverage on all the cars you own.
Because you receive UIM coverage by virtue of the policy. It is not broken out by vehicle. So, yes, if you list your second car on an Allstate policy, you will, by definition, have UIM coverage on that second car. You do not have the option of not selecting it. Allstate does not say, oh, well, then if you own a second car and don't insure it with us, we won't insure you. That is not an issue. There's nothing in the record, anything like that. And Mrs. Insured is free to go down the street and insure her second vehicle someplace else, and that doesn't change the coverage she gets for her Allstate policy under Vehicle 1. She has that choice and she has that option. But she knows, by virtue of the policy language, of the policy that covers Vehicle 1, that she already has Class 1 insurance in any vehicle she's in. And she knows that if she insures the second vehicle with Allstate, she can get Class 2 insurance. She also knows that if she doesn't insure it and a permissive user is using their second vehicle, Allstate's policy is not going to cover that. It has to be covered, if at all, by some other policy. But that is clear from the face of the policy documents that I was just reading to Your Honors. And she knows what she's getting she knows what she's paying when she makes that purchase. Because if she purchased the adds the second vehicle to the policy, she gets a premium statement that says, okay, we're now charging you the second premium amount, is to use the figure that Mr. Hill's pointing to, the 1.85, 185%. She now knows she's paying 185% when she gets her bill for that second premium. Again, it's always fully disclosed from day one what the policy provides and what she's paying to obtain those benefits.
And it's your position that the 185%, the extra 85%, provides her with only the Class 2 insurance.
That the second premium charge The incremental addition to the coverage benefits is the Class II benefit. That is correct. Because all Class I insureds are always covered in wherever they are. So it only adds insurance, UM coverage, for people, non-resident relatives, permissive users, who are occupying the second vehicle or the third vehicle or the fourth vehicle, which also, to be clear for the record, the Allstate pricing doesn't change after get after vehicle two. If they list the third vehicle, it's not another incremental increase. It's a straight 1.85 or whatever the number is. It applies whether it's two vehicles, three vehicles, five vehicles, or 105 vehicles. They only pay one premium to get that additional coverage. Bear in mind, that coverage has two sides to it. On the one hand, the insured does receive the benefit of purchasing these additional benefits, recognized by the Benzin Court as meaningful benefits. They are purchasing those for their resident, non-resident relatives, guest passengers, their grandmother doesn't live with them, the soccer team they're driving around, that sort of thing. So they are receiving a package. They may not personally receive an additional benefit for them individually with regard to an accident, but the people who are using their vehicles are receiving a benefit, and they're making that purchase. On the flip side of the coin, the insurance company is collecting an additional premium because there's additional exposure to loss. When there are multiple vehicles, more than one can be in use at the same time. You could have two, if you have five vehicles in the policy, five different drivers could be out there, and four of them could be permissive occupants, permissive users, none of which would be covered by four the additional benefits. Also, they could be filled with passengers. You can have the soccer team. You could have the Girl Scout troop riding with the permissive occupant or riding with the named insured, for that matter. They are also covered by the Class II benefit. And the important thing is that the Class II benefit recognizes that additional exposure to risk. The insurance company is entitled to collect a premium because it is insuring a greater and greater risk. And that's what the whole filed rate doctrine then comes into play, because the insurance department and the filings by the insurance companies are made to set the rates on an aggregate level and distribute the risk of all possible permutations among all of the policyholders. It's not a dollar for dollar, I'm buying $100 coverage and it costs me X dollars to buy that, but rather you're looking at a rate that is calculated to distribute an aggregate risk of an entire pool among the whole policyholder base so that it's fair, not unreasonable, not discriminatory.
Well, pardon me, Mr. Filotta, but assuming that to be true, then why don't you just avoid the problem by saying, okay, since the original insurance covers Class 1s and Class 2s and Car 1, why don't you just have an actuarially determined rate for Car 1 that would, if people want to add 2, 3, 4, et cetera, just cover? Why not do that? And doesn't that avoid the problem we've got now?
Off the top of my head, I don't know whether or not that's actuarially sound or possible. It may be. The important thing is that's what the rate structure system in Colorado is set up to do through filed rates. The insurance department passes upon the methodology that an insurer chooses in order to determine that calculation, and that's part of the competition system, Your Honor. One insurance company will make its actuarial determination based on a certain set of factors as to how it's going to price that second vehicle vis-a-vis the first vehicle. Allstate does it the way we have described. Each insurer can take different factors, and as long as the insurance department views them as reaching the criteria of non-excessive, non-discriminatory, and the standards that it applies under the filed rate doctrine, then you have competition among insurers as to which different forms. So it may be a valid procedure. It's not a necessary one. It's not required. The district court decision should be affirmed because the district court considered many of the grounds that have been discussed in the earlier decisions, in addition to the one that has taken the emphasis in the earlier parts of the argument, that where the court said, because the insurer does not have a choice, they have to buy a multi-vehicle policy situation, that means we get summary judgment. The district court actually heard other arguments. Allstate raised the fact that it did not have an owned but not insured exclusion. Allstate raised the fact that its premium rate structure was two-tiered, and it was on a per-policy basis. All of that was before the trial court, and the trial court stated that it was holding, in addition to the fact that there was no choice, that Allstate did not have a duty to advise other insureds about competitors' products. It said that Allstate's policy, it found that Allstate's policy clearly stated that Class 1 and Class 2 insureds were covered in insured vehicles. And it held that there were, the fact that there was no owned, not insured exclusion and no pricing disclosure issues, because the pricing was clearly stated, that there was no disclosure issue that Allstate had violated. And therefore, it went through and reviewed the claims that Mr. Hill's complaint outlined with regard to negligent misrepresentation, the Consumer Protection Act, and the other claims that were there. And it said, because of these additional factors, as well as the basis of its Maxwell decision, summary judgment was proper for Allstate. Again, this is a unique case, and it's extraordinary, because Mr. Hill's complaint says, because you have not made disclosure about something that didn't change your policy and didn't change how you charged for it, you're liable for something. And that's an extraordinary claim, because Allstate had it right, to coin a phrase, before De Herrera, and had it right after De Herrera. We believe summary judgment should be affirmed on that basis. Thank you.
May it please the court. I want to go back to just the two basics. If you look at the 10 cases that have been before this court to date that have been resolved, they all agreed on two things, one of which is that the trial court improperly and narrowly limited the consideration of our claims to duties arising under the Parfrey theory, if you will, and ignored the other statutory basis and the common law basis. As a result of that, there was never any consideration given to what duties arose under each of these claims. And if, for example, you look at Allstate, as we cited, there is a summary disclosure form. While there was never maybe an OB&I in the policy itself, the summary disclosure form that the statute requires them to provide to every insured, both upon the initial writing of the insurance and upon every renewal, which happened every 6 months, that summary disclosure form, if a consumer looked at it, said, it indicated that UIM Motors coverage, quote, is not provided for any motor vehicle owned by you or your resident relatives that is not insured for uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage under your policy, close quote. That tracks verbatim the OB&I and exclusion.
Is there any evidence that anybody relied upon that disclosure to the
No, company? Your Honor.
But that's a misstatement as opposed to an omission. So don't you have to come forward with something to say that that particular disclosure misled my client?
No, I don't, Your Honor. What I have to say is that that disclosure was inaccurate without the disclosure, i.e. with the omission of stating that after De Herrera, when that changed, it's back to that common law thing, that was accurate perhaps at one time, it wasn't accurate after De Herrera. They had an obligation to come forward and disclose, and they never did come forward and disclose. And it leaves the issue about whether or not this should be decided by the trial court under a standard that is all 10 judges, all 13 judges and all 10 decisions have said is the wrong standard. It also leaves, Your Honor, who's supposed to decide whether that's material? Your Honor, our point is that in the case after case after case, and if I could, I'll just, in the ANPAC decision, quote, undisclosed facts are material if the consumer's decision might have been different had the truth been disclosed. The Traveler's case. The issue of what is a material fact must be determined by the trier of fact, here the jury. Not only did the trial court apply the improper standard, as all 10 cases have agreed on everything other than the Parfrey line of theories, but the trial court also invaded the province of the jury, if you will, and decided what was material. And how could they decide what was material under these facts? All 10 of the decisions have found that to be inappropriate. We allege that those two omissions meant that people couldn't exercise their right to make informed consumers' decisions. It's exactly the point that was recently made in the ANPAC decision, which says, quote, had Briggs, the plaintiff in that case, been informed that the only benefit he received by paying UIM premiums on multiple vehicles was that Class II insureds received coverage. He could have made informed decisions about how to purchase the coverage he wanted, close quote. And you heard from counsel, Mrs. Customer had every option available to purchase as she wished, had she been properly informed.
Why isn't the policy that was issued by Allstate here disclosing to the potential consumer, you get coverage for Class II insureds on the second vehicle?
One, Your Honor, you heard counsel citing to a brief, citing to a policy. I didn't see the policy and I didn't hear a citation to the record. There is no document that was provided to the plaintiffs, in this case in record or I think in existence, that would allow any consumer to understand that simple theme that you were trying, they were trying to ask
about. You understand insurance policies, Mr. Hill.
Honey, it's just impossible to find that policy that it informed any insured that, one, it was going to follow them, not their vehicle, wherever they were, without regard to who owned or what vehicle they were in, and it's impossible to find any rational statement in any document in the record that suggests that an insured could have known what they were getting for that additional 85%. It's not there. My time's up. Thank you very much.
Thank you both for your arguments. The case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course.